Yeah, he's.
Yeah.
Okay. So what did we do? Did we finish off with a sort of an exercise or something last time? No, I can't remember.
No, we didn't do an activation at all. You had a meeting, you were running late, and you left us. We felt so forsaken. I love you.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Please.
Hey, everybody's got to do what they got to do. I had to run off after you were gone, and
Okay.
I totally get it.
Right. So, where do you want to start today? What's been going on?
I'm gonna just jump in there. I know one of the girls, I think Pamela Jones, in one of the other videos had said, "Oh, we esteem each other above the other, so we take too long to answer." I'm like, I know. I got to get on with this. We have a limited time. I'm eager. I'm anxious about it. I've been being called by the Lord, and I'm processing a lot of loss. And I'm being called by the Lord into a deeper, intimate place with Him. And He keeps showing me the bridal chamber. And because I've had so much loss recently, it's like I've got to press through it. And I think it's my natural inclination to want to hold back because I'm hurting. And it's like the Lord wants to comfort me and. I'm single, so I'm used to not having people hug me or embrace me or comfort me. I'm like, I'll deal with this. I'm a tough cookie. I can take this, you know. So I think the Lord is trying to get rid of some of that crustiness, and He's calling me into a deeper, tender place with Him. Have you ever been into that bridal chamber? And if you have or haven't, either way, how would you process it?
For me, it was a process of firstly engaging with the dance floor, and that opened me up to dancing with his presence and his DNA and light, and so that was a stage one, if you like, of a going beyond the garden. I mean, the garden was the first place where we hang out and we talk and we commune and we fellowship, and we sit in the green pasture or in a secret place, and various things of intimacy there. But that was very much more, he's looking at me, I'm looking at him, we're talking. And so it's fellowship. And there's a degree of intimacy that comes through sharing and talking and communing with each other and looking at each other. And then when he led me into the dance floor, that really was more of an intimacy which was experiential, in that I felt him lead me in the dance, and it was, and I mean, I'm not a dancer, so it's like, I wouldn't say I've got two left feet, but when it comes to sport, I've got very much a left and a right foot, but when it comes to dancing, it's always been something. It was a bit like, ooh, but when my two daughters got married, I danced with them, and they weren't expecting it, because they just know I don't dance. So I made a point of embracing them, and it was an intimate moment. And when the father embraced me on that dance floor, he began to lead, and that was the first thing. I need to let him lead, even though I'm a guy. It's like I had to let him lead, and it's in some sense it may be easier for you, because you
I'm
have
an alpha male.
you know
I'm
you
an alpha female, so it
yeah
is challenging. And I raised five sons and seven brothers.
yeah.
So I've always had to be very firm and strong, gentle and tender as much as I could, but
Yeah,
it
but when I
challenged.
sort of engaged with that, I found it awkward to start with, because it was like it didn't feel, to my soul, it didn't feel natural, because it was like, I don't dance, and B, if I do dance, I should be leading the dance, and this was no. You need to allow get me to lead. And so he began to sort of waltz me. It was a very slow sort of waltz. I mean, you know, I mean, I love dancing in worship, and you know, some people wouldn't call it dancing. It's my expression of joy to God, and I don't really care what anyone else thinks. And you know, I'm not really too worried about the beat or the rhythm either. It's just like I'm just having fun in God. But this was very much to a traditional waltz-like beat, and so I was, you know, so all that was sort of part of going deeper, and so that took me into this place of intimacy. Now I now understand the dance floor, and I understand some of the steps are to trigger DNA and to turn off sequences in DNA, and the sort of black and white checkerboard floor, you know, is about switches and things. So I've sort of experienced that more now. But
oh,
then,
now I get it. I've been at that dance floor with the black and white, and yeah. I thought about the Illuminati, and I thought, what am I doing here? But I'm like, oh my God, you know, okay. And I danced with him a little bit, and I could see like rays of color and frequency and fragrance.
Yeah.
And then I had to leave. I had to go because of my schedule.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. Engage the dance floor.
Yeah, engage the dance floor. And when I was there, it was like, you know, eventually you begin to realize that the sort of strands of light and the DNA of God begin to entwine around you, and it touches your spirit. Then the next chamber is the soaking room, and that's the place where, you know, if like Queen Esther was prepared for a year by, you know, to be the sort of the king's bride, if you like, and so they prepared her body with fragrant oils and perfumes, and everything was just preparation for intimacy. And so when I engaged there, it was like I had to let him like pamper me, you know. And it was like the fragrances and the color, and again, you know, I'm not that sort of guy, you know. I'm not, you know, perfumey stuff. It's just, I don't, you know, I'm just, it's not me, you know. Now I've had a few experiences where perfume has come out of my hands and fragrant oils have come out of my hands, which made me feel really awkward at the time, and so I just sort of laid hands on people quick and gave it away. but he did do it a few times, so it was like, okay, I'll go with it. But it was very much like, okay, let him bring fragrances and frequencies and that sort of to realign me. So it was very much sort of a realignment, bringing my body, soul, spirit into harmony with him. For me, it was really intimate because, you know, I've never had a massage, and I've never had any of that sort of stuff. So I've never let anyone touch me like that. But it felt like I just needed to surrender, it felt like a massage of oil and fragrant frequencies and color, which just prepared me, and it prepared me for intimacy. You know, it prepared me to go deeper, and then eventually. You know, there were other experiences that went with this in terms of some of the encounters in the realms of heaven also opened that engagement for me in terms of the Firestones and different places of intimacy there, the judgment seat, and they corresponded sort of to some of these things that I went through. So there were parallel experiences in heaven. But eventually when I got to the bridal chamber, it was like becoming one. You know, it was the oneness, being joined to the Lord and being one spirit with him. It's like my DNA and his DNA and the light and my spirit, soul and body just go into a level of intimacy where, you know, I was not my own anymore. I was not just me. You know, I know that I'm in him and him in me, but this is deeper than that. And I think when it talks about that in 1 Corinthians 6:17, you know, he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit. It equates that in verse 14, it equates that with what happens when someone gets joined to a prostitute and becomes one flesh with them. And that is as intimate as you can get, I guess, physically. And this is on par with that spiritually. It's me totally giving myself to him and him totally giving himself to me so that we become entwined, joined, united, one in spirit. Obviously not in flesh, but there is an emotional response to it, which is very, very intimate and very, very tender and almost like allowing him access to the deepest parts of me, everything. No holding back. So when you consummate, if you like, marriage, you hold nothing back, you give everything. And this is really what it's like on a spiritual connection. It's like I'm holding nothing back and he's holding nothing back, and I can become entwined and joined. Now, if we have issues that in our natural relationships where we have potentially been damaged, where love and intimacy has been a source of abuse or a source of control or manipulation, you know, this can be a very frightening experience for our soul.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the things I'm dealing with is because I'm SRA.
Right.
And
yeah,
I'm a brave little girl, but it's challenging.
Yeah, no, I can understand.
And so I'm pushing forward because he's already taken me to the dance floor. He's shown me the soaking room, which it looked like it was like a, it wasn't a pool, it was more like the river of life. Yeah. And I mean, he's just taking me, because I'm really willing, but my soul is getting in the way.
Yeah.
You know, my history is trying to hold me back.
Yeah.
And so that's why when he showed me the dance floor and I saw the tile on the floor, it freaked me out, but I held on to him. And he just swirled me with the frequencies and the colors, and he took my mind away from the floor, and just, it's been challenging.
Yeah.
And I'm here, and I'm going in.
Okay.
Well, I'm going in.
If you think of the whole lie-busting thing and a reintegration of parts, then this would be the equivalent of that in intimacy with God. So that... Yeah. I have to allow all the parts of me, whether there are fractured parts, whatever you describe it, I am allowing all of me to be integrated into him and him into me at the most deepest level of emotion and engagement. So it's a very, very intense place.
Yes, and in the process of lie busting, when I was going through the beta group training, and eventually I became a circle leader, I've been lie busted a few times, and that's where he's taken me to these different heavenly places, because he had me. You know, I was being lie busted, and he had me, and I couldn't linger there too long because of the time frame of the lie bust, you know. So it's just places I need to go back and revisit and let him continue the work. So I was wondering why the bridal chamber, and then I thought, well, if you're not mature, you can't go into the bridal chamber if you're still a child. So I started meditating on that, and I thought he must recognize that I'm in a different level, even though I don't give myself credit. You know,
sure,
but
yeah.
I guess, you know, being an SRA, you have to have something mature. You're young, you know, you grow up young, very, very young, you know, 3 years old, now you're a teenager doing teenager things, you know. Yeah. So it's a challenge, but I'm going in.
Yeah, and, you know, and just take the process as preparation for the final consummation of that when, you know, that full reintegration and oneness will take place within you, but also with him and you.
Yes.
And that will be an amazing healing and wholeness experience, bringing you back into a place of peace within yourself and peace with him, because that's the place of rest. And you know, all the, you know, it's, you know, you can't just jump in there, as you say. It's like, you know, that Esther was prepared to meet the king for 12 months. That was, yeah, that was the length of time that they prepared, you know, in those days, the concubines or the harem or whatever, to, yeah, be ready for that engagement, you know.
Mm-hmm. And she had to be at her best, because it wasn't guaranteed at that time that she'd be selected as queen. So her attitude, her heart had to be fully in it, like, I'm going to win, I'm going to do this all the way. And so I've been getting my mind, my heart, integrated enough to be able to say, I'm all in, no holding back, I'm all in. So yeah, this time of grieving and challenge, it's not going to hold me back. I just needed to get a little bit of feedback from you, because I thought it was interesting that it would be the bridal chamber.
Yeah,
I still want to be in the playground.
But you know, it is bringing us to maturity. You know, it is mature sons who will inherit and operate in governmental authority in the realms of heaven. You know, it's mature sons, and you know, yes, there is the grieving and the dealing with the soul, so that we can be in that place of preparedness. And so that's all part of the process. And you know, but it's like remembering that he carries our griefs and our sorrows. So in the process, we must remember to hand them over to him to carry. Mm-hmm. When they come up, not to just let them overwhelm us, but to immediately hand them over and give them to him, because he promises to carry our griefs and our sorrows.
Mm-hmm.
So we
good
don't
point.
Have to do that, you know, in our own strength, you know.
Yes, yes. Yes, and being SRA, you have no one to reach out to, and so it's just old habits that need to be dealt with.
Yeah,
and that's a good point. You know, I'm not alone anymore. He's with me, and I've got to remember I'm not alone. Give him the griefs, give him the sorrows, just do it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, you're welcome.
I'm gonna put the camera off. I'm here, but I gotta get ready.
Okay.
Love you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Yes. Okay. Anyone else?
I don't know if you guys can hear me, because you guys are like under the water all day today, and I've been having a bad connection, obviously.
Yeah, I can hear you at the minute. So yeah.
Okay. I would like to know, maybe, you know, in the teaching, just engaging your angels. That's really what I'm really finding I'm having. I think I need to be doing more, and just, I mean, I do what I know to do, but I don't know if I really know anything.
Okay. Well, there's levels of engagement with the angelic realm. There's our own personal angels who are with us, assigned guardians, there to help us, ministering spirits for us and on our behalf. And, you know, they're there. You know, obviously I can see them when I look into people and around people. And it's a matter for us to choose to engage them. So it's that conscious awareness of them being there to serve us. So, you know, I'm not, something. I mean, they just want to be involved, you know. So if, for instance, you know, I would be going somewhere, I would send them ahead of time to prepare the way. Just like, you know, when I think it was Isaac, I think, sent his servant out to find a wife, you know, that type of thing. I think it was Abraham and for Isaac. And he sent his servant out, but he said, you know, the Lord will send his angels ahead of you to prepare the way. You know, and so there's a sense where we can do that. So, you know, and even in very basic terms, God's favor and blessing is on us. So they are often are involved in preparing for that favor and blessing to be released. So I send them out to prepare the way. If I'm going, if I'm traveling, you know, I expect, you know, all the lights to be right, or if the light needs to be wrong or red to stop me engaging in something which could be down the road, then I look for those things. You know, I send my angels to get me parking spaces when I need to park close to somewhere. You know, it's just everyday things, as well as, you know, to be with me in ministry. So one of my angels is a white sort of winged horse, and that he appears and brings things to minister with. You know, when I used to do a lot of ministry and praying for people one-to-one a lot and in groups, he would bring things attached to him, sometimes crowns and rings and garlands and all sorts of things, just bring them so I would then be able to take them and give them away to others. So that was that sort of area of being involved in ministry, you know, in provision. So if I need something, then I can send the angels out to bring it to me. Sometimes I've lost things and I've just sent them to find them, you know, and I actually find the things in places that I didn't lose them. So they will find them and place them where I can do it. I mean, this happened 3 or 4 times in the last few months with me, where I lost my keys. You know, I lost my car keys, my house keys, and I was like, oh, I need to drive to work. So where are my keys? You know, and I looked everywhere, and they weren't there. And then I looked back in a place that I sent the angels to find them. I looked back into a place where I'd looked before, and there they were. You know, and they had appeared there because the angels had placed them there. You know, so there's that sort of interaction with our daily personal lives that they are assigned to us for. Then there's, you know, another level of engagement with the angelic, where you would then be looking for involvement in assignment. So I have a mandate. I can go to my mountain with that mandate, and from that mountain I can engage in the court of angels and see who is going to be assigned to this mandate. Now, those won't necessarily be my personal angels, but there will be angels that are attached to the mandates that I receive. So, you know, if I have a mandate, I don't know, for a particular group or a particular meeting or a particular court case, you know, the things like that, where I will take that mandate, that scroll, to the court of angels, and I will see who's going to go, you know. Like, and Jesus, you know, God did that. You know, it's like it was a situation with Ahab, and he was in the assembly with the court of angels, and it was like, well, who is going to go for us? And an angel said, yeah, I'll go. You know? And so they recognize assignments that has their name on them, if you like, their mark, and they volunteer. And then sometimes you just release them to do what they do. Sometimes you just know what to do to send them. You know, send them into the atmosphere of the earth to clear away some issues, maybe culturally over an area or within, you know, rulers or principalities and powers and that sort of stuff. You know, you may send them out into the highways and byways, you know, to compel people to come into a situation. You know, there's things like that that are connected with a mandate that then authorizes us, you know. Sometimes when I'm just on my mountain, I'm on my throne, I have authorization to do things, You know, I will just, you know, if you think there's a whole canopy, 10 canopies of angels over us, all the different levels and layers of the angelic are over us, when we're on our throne, because they recognize that we're in the same place that God is, and so they come around us, but they're around his thrones, the myriads and myriads and the different layers. So you have all the different layers of the angelic there, you know, the chaos and the ophanim and the, you know, the seraphim and the terror, you know, all those, not, you know, Kashmelim, Ishim, Ben Elohim, Elohim, you know, 10 of them, 10 orders of the angelic. And they all have particular functions. So, you know, if I was feeling that I have a mandate to release the fire of God to purify and bring this fiery sword into a situation, then I would call for the seraphim to come. You know, if I want to help people engage in intimacy and worship, I call for the Kashmelim to come, the shining ones, and their colored ribbons and worshipful sort of engagement, you know. And it's that type of thing. If I want something warfare done, then, you know, I call some of the heavy duty ones, the Erelim or the Ishim. You know, our church angel, you know, is a large angel. You know, I've engaged with the angel over our region, you know, and he has a stride which is 75 miles. You know, so it's large. You know, these are guys you want to get when you need something done, you know. So it's just learning that, you know, very often I call for the chaos, who are the fiery pillars, or the fiery chariots, or the fiery horses, or the fiery swords. You know, sometimes the angelic ladders, and golden ladders that appear, that they're all to do with those sorts of things. So, you know, you can engage with them. You know, when I want to engage with times and seasons, then I would engage with Metatron, who is the chief of that order, and, you know, is the keykeeper and the timekeeper. Some of it is you just learn by experience and go with what your spirit sort of directs you to. But the more time you look at meditating around it, and the more time you spend talking to them, then the more interaction you seem to have. You know, we have a whole host of angelic engagement in our meetings. You know, so we have the four faces of God, the four living creatures, they turn up. We have four angels that are associated with the season that we're in transformation and winds of change and sound of many waters and refining fire. And so they come every time we gather. They come, and wherever I go, they go with me. So if I go to minister in a place, they go. And so I'm very aware of their presence. They usually have heralding trumpets in which they herald this season, and they call people to respond and come into the frequency for transformation, or, you know, to embrace a new season, or to go deeper into the deep calling to deep. You know, they have a real clear function. But when they then engage with the four faces of God, they produce an arc. This is what's happened with us recently. I've seen and looked at seeing, hey, they're producing an arc. They're coming into agreement for something special. So we have an alignment where north, south, east, and west, where the four faces of God are aligned, and these other angels align on the point of the shape, if you like, or the square, and connect. So, for instance, the lion is facing east, and on the next side, or my right-hand side of that east, from when I look, is transformation. So when the lion and transformation agree and come together, they form an arc that manifests something that people can actually physically engage in and step into. And so often, you know, we have someone who's very good with flags and banners and colors and movement. She'll lay out flags and in a particular place, and we have a flag for each of the four faces of God. We have a flag for each one of those angels, and she'll position them on the floor. When she sees that in the spirit, and we encourage people to step into that place. You know, I'm going to do teaching on it in a couple of weeks to explain all the interactions between, like, the eagle and the winds of change, and the eagle and transformation and different things, just so that people can actually see, yeah, there's something that happens, and usually a portal opens, and there's a manifestation of something of the angelic in that that people can step into, but also they can step through that into something into the realms of heaven. I mean, I don't fully understand it all. You know, when I engaged in one of these areas, I felt drawn. I just usually say, you know, wherever your spirit's drawn, whatever its color it's drawn to, or whatever flag or whatever angel it's drawn to, just go with it and step there by faith. I stepped in between the arc between the sound of many waters and the eagle. And as soon as I stepped into it, I was just in a different place. It was like I just went deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I went into a familiar place I'd been before, and then I went deeper into it. And it was a really powerful experience. And then when I got as far as I could go, it's like the eagle just took me into this realm that I'd never been before. And I'm in this sort of blue place, you know, and it's like very difficult to describe, you know. But, you know, it was like a place of oneness where everything came together and everything was different, but everything was the same. And I just hung out there for quite a while. I was on my face in that place for a while, you know, completely oblivious to where everything else, simply because this was a place where this had opened up because of the agreement between these angels to outwork something in our midst. And, you know, and it works. I mean, you know, we have a ministry which is to rehabilitate people, and it's a therapeutic community, and, you know, guys come from all sorts of walks, backgrounds, addictions, and everything else. And, you know, one guy, he was standing up, and he just felt God say, take a step to your left. And he was just engaged in worship. And this is, he's come from a, you know, a background which is not Christian, let's say, but he's come in, encountered God, met God, been transformed, and standing there. So he takes a step to his left, and immediately, this is how he described it, I'm looking out through the eye of an eagle. And he's flying, looking out through the eye of an eagle, has no real, you know, most of his spiritual experiences are drug-induced, I guess, but he never had anything like this. And so when he comes out of this, eventually he looks down and he's standing on the eagle flag. You know, he didn't know he was standing on the, he didn't even know he was standing on a flag. But that just engagement just opened up a realm for him to experience and to enter into and engage. So, you know, there's a lot more, I think, you know, a lot more that they want to do in connection with us, in ministering to us and with us and through us. And, you know, also that they want to do to help us access something that God would be wanting to do to help us transform, but also wanting to take us higher and deeper and into our destiny and places of engagement, you know. And I think I've practiced looking into that realm to perceive what's going on there, you know, and the more practice I've done, the easier it's got. So, you know, for me, being sensitive, you know, a good place to start is when you get up in the morning or when you wake up in the morning and when you just look to open your first love gate or something, just welcome those angels. Just acknowledge their presence with you, you know, and the more you acknowledge them, you know, if you don't know their names, ask them their names, you know, and it's just, you know, and okay, well, who are you, and, you know, what's your name, and what's your function, and, you know, what's your assignment with me? I mean, just talk to them, you know, and see what you get back, you know? And the more we engage with them in their name and in their function, the more that they will function with us, and the more we will be able to do what God does, which is they're there for his service. They're messengers, you know. If we have messengers that we want to take to places that we can't physically go, send an angel with the message to somebody. I mean, I had a really interesting experience once that someone came up to me and asked, I've never seen an angel, you know, I would really like to see an angel, and I've never seen one, I've tried, I've never seen one. So I was like, okay. So I thought, well, okay, how do we deal with this? So what I said was, right, the easiest place for you to start to see an angel will be in a dream, because you won't be blocking anything. You'll be open. So I said, what I'm going to do, I'm going to assign my angel to come and visit you in a dream. I'm not going to tell you what it looks like, but I'm going to send it to you in a dream. So the next week, you know, I saw him next week, he came up to me, he's like, I had a dream, and in this dream I saw this. And I said, okay. And he saw a white winged horse come to him in his dream. So I thought, okay, that's good. My angel was on the ball and able to engage. Now, you know, what did that do? Well, that built his faith. It opened up him to the fact that the angelic is a real engagement area. And then, you know, he was able then to pursue that and to go on with it, you know. So there's a whole lot of stuff around there which we're only just embracing. I mean, I've not, you know, gone into the angelic courts and the chancellor's courts and the different thing where, you know, there's angelic engagement with all those in terms of the scribes and, you know, very much very part of everything that goes on in the realms of the spirit. You know, we call them angels, but in reality, they're just spiritual being, created spiritual beings. You know, have many different functions and many different forms, and can change form and can appear sometimes in human form and all sorts of different things there. So, yeah.
That's good. I just I've been seeing a lot of movement, like real time. Usually I see forms, and I mean, they're huge. So now I'm like, okay, something's really happening here. You know, not that it wasn't before, but it's like it's trying to grab my attention. So I'm like, because it literally looks like a person almost, you know, the movement, it's so fast. And yeah, so I've just been really trying to, like, okay, what, you know, trying to ask the questions, how to engage, and then these huge angels that I'm seeing, I'm not getting a sense of their function, because they're very, like, I don't even know how to, almost like an attention, bigger than buildings.
Yeah. Well, if you think of, you know, biblical encounters, the angel of the Lord often appeared before the presence of the Lord came. You know, so in Moses' burning bush, it says the angel appeared in the bush before the Lord spoke from the bush. And, you know, like the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire which led the children of Israel were angels, and they were pretty big, and they led and directed which way to go. So sometimes there are signposts when there's a change of season coming, a change of direction coming. You know, they can show up like that to get our attention, to make sure that we're going to go onto the right track or the right path. You know, all sorts of different things that God uses to get our attention to make sure, hey, this is important. You know, and the size of them may just be, hey, this is a big important decision, or you know, there's something that God is saying here because it's going to be something important for us, you know, because if it was something you'd seen before, you may not see it as that. It was just, oh, as angels or whatever. So actually it's, okay, well, what's the difference? Because it makes you think, doesn't it? Why are these angels so big? You know, why are they appearing now? You know, and in meditating that, then sometimes it's like they are signs and they're messengers, and sometimes they don't bring a message, they are the message. And then it's, okay, what are you trying? I would then go back to God with those things. What are you trying to show me? If they're not telling you anything, and you're not able to necessarily engage with them in that way, then there must be a sign that God has sent that he wants your attention. So, okay, God, you got my attention. So what are you trying to tell me? You know, what does this mean? And so, you know, it's that type of thing. You know, God got Moses' attention in the burning bush with the angel before he spoke, you know. So, and that was a pretty significant time in Moses's life, that God needed to get his attention to change the whole direction, to get him back onto his destiny, having him walked out of his destiny for 40 years and tried to do it his own way, now it was time for him to get back into the right place. You know? So, and God used that to do that and to engage him with it. You know? So, yeah, lots of things there to, for a lot of people, it's just different in different ways, but they are very much messengers and sign pointers, and in when it comes like that, you know, those that are with us is different, but those who are there, they're very much that way. You know, when I engaged the angel over our region several times, you know, it was so huge, you know, but actually when I was engaging with him, it was like I was looking at him. I wasn't sort of stood as this tiny little spot looking at a 75-mile-wide angel. It's like I was there on that level with him, and so I was seeing things from his perspective. You know, and he had a big shovel in one hand, a big spade, and in another, you know, he had a torch. So I'm like, okay, what are you doing? You know, and he was able to tell me, what's your name? What are you doing? I'm doing this. And I'm like, okay. So then it's like, well, why am I seeing this? And why do I feel as big as you do? Because actually you have a role in this. You're called to operate in this. So that's what it felt like. It was like, okay, this is a sign of my engagement with this. You know, and therefore I have a responsibility in this, which, you know, is a challenge at times, you know, because I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, but then it opened up with two people when I saw this. Within a few days, someone called me and said, we need to get together. And then, and there's this other guy, he needs to get together with you. We need to get together. And eventually we became Adventure 3, simply because the timing was such. And when I shared this vision, they were like, hey, we need to get together. And that really started a whole process. But it came out of engaging an angel.
So what I'm hearing you saying is pretty much being led by the Spirit, even though you really feel like you have no clue what you're doing, just being led by your Spirit to do what you sense.
Yeah.
And as they lead you and train you and teach you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and if there's anything that you are unsure about, yeah, just go back to God and talk to him about it.
Right.
You know, because if he is sending a sign, he doesn't want you to miss it by being unsure. So he'll tell you when you, because what you'll be saying is, hey, I've seen this sign. What's it about? You know, if it's a sign, you know, if it's that type of, what's the message? You know, and particularly I think at this point, God is using some of these signs to make sure that we're looking in the right direction and we're moving in the right direction. For some, they need to shift direction of where they're looking and moving. You know, one of the other things that has appeared recently quite a lot is these ancient ones, these ancient hooded figures that are seemingly appearing when there is a need for someone to change direction or to get on an ancient path or to engage something different. They just seem to show up. You know, and they're pretty, you know, interesting, you know, pretty mysterious and quite sort of spooky, really, because they're sort of hooded. And a lot of people have been like, wow, I felt a bit uncomfortable, but actually I didn't feel afraid. You know, if the enemy turns up like that, you get a different reaction. It may be like, I'm not sure what's going on, but you get that sort of, I feel these are here for good. You know, but they are hooded, and they do carry mysteries, and they do know about the ancient past, and they've been around a long time so that they can bring some ancient wisdom to us about how we, where, what path to tread. Quite interesting characters, really. But, yeah.
Are you seeing keys with them, too?
Pardon?
Are you seeing the keys with them, handing out keys, the ancient keys?
Yeah. Some of them have handed out ancient keys. Some of them have handed out ancient scrolls. Some of them have just been here as almost like, this is the direction you need to go. There is a new path. And I almost like, I'm familiar with this path. You need to become familiar with this path. You know? But cool. I mean, it's like, because there's just so much shifting going on in the spiritual realms. God is mobilizing all the troops, you know, and they're all getting activated to get us, you know, involved in what's going on, you know. So pretty interesting. Yeah. So I get asked lots of questions, and I'm like, oh, okay, I need to go and find out. So I go and find out some things sometimes, because sometimes I've not had a personal engagement with an ancient one, or I've seen them. You know, I've seen them when other people have seen them, but I've just never personally engaged. You know, well, I suppose I've engaged with Enoch, who's pretty ancient, and you know, he's sort of directed me and given me some quests and things. But he wasn't a hooded figure, you know, in that same way. But you know, pretty interesting times that we're in, you know, and there's a lot of mobilization and movement and shifting of things right now, you know, which is really good.
A lot going on, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Right.
Feels like there's no more seasons, almost. The shifting is so quick, it's like our seasons could last an hour.
Yeah.
So... God-breaking patterns. I had an interesting thing happen last week, and the timing of it was really bizarre. That, you know, it's like God set up a bullseye and shoved me into it and went, and I went, oh, okay, that's what it is. I had my first experience as a bench of three, but it actually wasn't for this area. It was for France. And my husband's French, and I'm a French citizen now, and my name is a town in France in Normandy where my husband comes from. So it's all kind of weirdly, coincidentally linked.
Yeah.
Bless you. And it was weird because I got triggered by something that happened when I was in France, and in my eyes that I have now, that I didn't have in 2003. In my immaturity, I was able to see now what was God was wanting to do then. That it was something that happened. It was a conference that happened. And we were getting into spontaneous worship. And I had been anointed by this huge angel who had poured this bucket of oil on my head and anointed me for worship there. And we were having signs and stuff. And the minute that we didn't do a typical worship, you know, the Lord said, no song list, no agenda, here's this psalm, go sing it. And I'm like, okay. And my band all went, well, we'll just follow you. So we started to do that. And so when we started to do that, people started having open visions and seeing chariots come in. And within 15 minutes, it was shut down. The person that I was doing came up, grabbed a mic, shut it all down, and we were livid.
Yeah,
you know, because and so it was weird because last week was Thanksgiving, so it was the 26th, 27th, 28th, which was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So 11 years ago to the day was that conference.
All right.
In the 11th month, I mean, it was just like, okay, there's all these 11s, so. I'm getting all triggered by all of this, and I'm on a call on Mondays with a girl in France who was a witness at that time, and we actually went into this experience, and the other girl who lives in Houston who lived in France, and she goes, what's a bench of three? And I'm like, I think we're supposed to do that today. We don't even know what we're doing.
That's a good place to be.
So we just go, okay, I think we're supposed to do bench of three, and so we went back, and we... took it all to court. We just brought everybody in, stood in their place, repented. And then what was interesting is that I thought I had dealt with all of this, like in my heart. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought that I've hacked it. Man, I have delivered it. I've done everything you can do. And so I'm sitting there, and they said, okay, well, we're going to bring the two people who actually did the shutting down of the thing. And so one of them said, I want you to voice what the Lord was wanting to see happen, and to tell them what they actually did. And so I'm talking, and the Lord's talking through me, and I'm going, wow, you really, and my mouth is talking, and I'm thinking, wow, you really wanted to do all that night. Because I didn't know. I was just I'd just been awakened. I didn't even know any of that. And so I was supposed to forgive them. And I had them before me in the spirit, and one of the questions that was asked was what we did, well, do they feel that in their lives? So I went to speak to them what the Lord was wanting to do, and what I saw was that the Lord was wanting to actually use me as a midwife to bring forth something in France over the city of Paris. And what happened, what it was stolen, and then a reptilian seed was planted there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so true. You know, my mouth is saying it, and my mind just went, wow. So and so I went to go release forgiveness, and I couldn't.
Oh, okay.
I was like, like this, and I didn't know that I couldn't do that, right? And so I'm like sitting there going, I can't. And so they came around me in the spirit on either side and moved forward and started repenting, releasing forgiveness for me. And they recognized it. And when they started to do that, I could actually speak. And what came out of my mouth was, I forgive them. I don't mean it, but I forgive. My heart wasn't there, right? But I'm like, I can release it with my mouth.
Mm.
And what was interesting is that, okay, so we finished all that, and then all of a sudden, I think I'm a seer, and I see angelic, you know, and I engage all that when I'm worshiping, but I swear that I could hear the chatter of the Lord nonstop, like 24/7.
Mm.
It just became so much clearer, and I could see the, almost like an outline of shoulders and standing right in front of me, and just this it was like a almost not an audible voice, but like the Lord talking to me in a totally different way.
Yeah.
And anyway, it was just an amazing experience, and I've heard that when you have those kind of breakthroughs, that you something happens with the sound and the frequency, and you get a new sound. And that day, I bought this electric guitar, and I've been trying to buy one for 4 years, and I bought it that day. And it was also coincidental that I know it's significant, but I have no idea what I don't know. I know it's really significant. I could just feel it, and then went, "What does that mean?"
Well, I mean, in a sense, you have some major blockages that have been shifted, and I think you know the 11 years, the 11 months, you got two ones there, which basically are what is an arc. Effectively, it's two coming into agreement. And so you've brought the past and the present into agreement by doing what you've done to release the future, and you know, in a sense, as you said, you did what you needed, what you knew to do, but actually there was still a deeper level which only comes to the surface when you engage in a heavenly courtroom function like that. That's when you know whether you've forgiven people properly, or whether you can or not. You do. It's like, because you can't lie in the sense before God, and so you know but you're obedient, and that's the key in this, is when you release the words of obedience, then that gives God the permission to respond and to bring a realignment of the frequencies that are there. Because in a sense, what happens is they were completely in the wrong in shutting it down, but as you judged that, that blocked the frequency for you to do that again. And so now that has been removed, then that opens the frequency for you to be able to release that again and again. So that reef connects with that part of your destiny, so that then that will then be multiplied, and it will now begin to increase. So the significance of it is, you know, there's a huge blockage removed that now enables you to hear and engage and release that in a multiplied way. You know, hence, you know, you're more sensitive, you're picking things up more in the spirit. Well, you know, what you need, you see, now is the 11 years of where that was stolen and robbed, restored. So you can have that restored from Satan's trophy room, restored to you, so that you get those 7 years rolled up into now, and take the heritage that you would have had if you like, having had 7 years. Because you can imagine, if it hadn't have been shut down and God had done what he wanted to do, how that would have opened up a whole nation, perhaps, to an encounter with the Spirit and with the revelation of God and all those things. And all that was robbed and stolen, yes, by these people, but in your judgment of them, and it enabled a blockage to take place. Now that has now been removed. So, you know, you can, again, be brought back into an agreement and alignment with that. Which, you know, God sometimes, well, why does it take 11 years? Sometimes there are cycles and seasons. And as you say, now it's like this was 11 years later and you're in the 11th month and that's the anniversary of when it was. And, hey, there's a new cycle and a new season coming which you can step into and engage in. And see everything restored. And
what was interesting is that the person that I was doing it with, she hasn't been able to come back to France to minister since then.
Yeah.
And I've tried twice to go back, and one time I missed my flight and missed the whole thing that I prepared. My flight got canceled. Like, what? And then the second time, it was so hard. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. I'm like, I am not going back until the Lord said. I've been waiting since 05 to go back. And so I thought, well, maybe what we did, you know, created some healing so that I can go back. And so I didn't know if that... When you do those kinds of things, the people that I brought in and we stood in their place, will they know that? Will they feel that?
Well,
what we did?
Yeah, well, what it'll do is it will then release them to be able for God to engage them. Because effectively you have tied them to you. And when now you've released them from what they did, now they're in God's hands for God to be able to outwork in them.
And, but, okay.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd already released them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd release them year after, you know, just always, I forget, bless them, I really, you know. But when I got to that place, when they were in front of me, and I was like, you know. So, yikes.
I know what you're saying. And because there's levels, you know, where we do what we know to do, but we're not fully aware or understanding of what's gone on and what level that's impacted us within our soul. So, yes, they did this. It made me angry. I forgive them. But actually, did I deal with what it did in my soul? Because I chose to forgive them. But actually, did I recognize there was a debt? And this is the key to forgiveness. There is always a debt of effect. So it wasn't just that they shut down that thing on that night and spoiled that night and you were angry about what they did then. There was an ongoing effect. So actually, they then spoiled what would have been that came out of that for years to come. And that shut down that for years, you know. And so
I could feel that.
Yeah.
I could feel that night, even in my immaturity, that's where I could feel what God was getting ready to push forward.
Yeah.
Cause my seer gifting had been activated the year before Kathy Walters came and called me out as a seer. And I went, I don't want to be a seer. What is that? I want to be a prophet. You know, I was, like, it was weird, but
yeah.
I was like, I don't see her. What is that? No. And so I was seeing the push of what he was wanting to bring forward, and that's the grieving that happened, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the time when it comes to those issues of emotional situations like that, we don't realize the depth. We deal with it on layers, and it isn't until the layers are unpeeled, if you like, that you get to, actually, this is the real issue here. Once you get to that and you release that, I mean, it's all about the seed of offense and the roots of bitterness and the fruits of resentment, and you have to... See, often we forgive people and we try and deal with the fruits and we try and cut down the fruits, but we haven't dealt with the root. But actually, it isn't the root, it's not the issue. The root's only there actually because of the seed. It's the seed that's been sown and gone in that actually produced the roots, and then the fruits grew out of that. And so if we don't deal with the actual seed of offense, we can keep, yeah, I'm getting rid of that root of bitterness, I'm dealing with that fruit of resentment, but the seed of offense is still there. You know, and sometimes we just don't realize the depth that that seed has gone into until we get to a point like this. And it's like, okay, now this can stay no longer because God has got a mandate and an assignment for you that you're going to need everything that has been robbed and stolen returned so that you can do that. Now, of course, you have a different revelation and a different access, so you can engage in heaven and you can minister into France whether you go there or not, because now you have access into that spiritual realm and you've now operating as a bench of three with government into certain things. Well, you know, then you can get some mandates and, okay, what is the blueprint that we've been given? Is that a blueprint for personal ministry? Is that a blueprint to release others into ministry? You know, God will show you what the blueprint is to do with that government. You know, it may have just been government for that one night. You know, who knows? You know, until you sort of, okay, God, is there a blueprint that I need to see that which will enable me then to see where the government gets outworked? You know, and you won't know that until you go back and seek him about it.
Well, it took us all by surprise, yeah. Right? We'd all been thinking, are we a bench? Well, we're three of us, and we used to be like six, you know, a couple of people more on there, and we didn't know what we were doing. We were just like, and one of the girls was like, the Lord was talking to me this morning about a bench of three, and I'm like, you know, I mean, we just didn't know what we were doing. It was, and we still don't, so I guess we need to go, okay, so now we are. Right? And
yeah.
Let's go.
So what's the blueprint? You know, what are we authorized to do? You know? And once you've, then you get the mandates that then give you the direction. And one of your mandates may be, hey, okay, go back to France. One of it may be release others to, I mean, who knows what those are, but you'll find that now that you've refocused and the blockages are out of the way, now it's like, okay, what is God's plan and purpose in this? From this point on, having us brought the past and aligned it now with the present so that we can see the full outworking of what would have been outworked now, because that's always been God's intention. We just need to engage with it now. Okay. So, yeah, it's good. Really good. Thanks, them. Yeah.
I would like to one day, maybe next time, go into Satan's trophy room and get that back.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No,
and it. Whatever else. And yeah.
Is there, yeah.
Now that I'm aware, the first time I went, it was a little scary, but now I'll go with determination.
Yeah, sure. No, that's good. Excellent. Okay. All right, well, about...